Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 102 of Slamfire Radio for April 10th, 2015. I'm one of your hosts, Matthew the Warning Shot McClatchy.
I'm another one, Trevor Furlot.
And I'm the third wheel, Owen Swellen.
Third wheel, Owen. Hey, third wheel, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Yeah. Oh, wait, you're not the important one. We have a guest this week.
So technically, you're the fourth wheel this week, Owen.
Yeah, because you bump down below the guest.
I'm used to that. I understand.
Yeah. Well, really, the guest is right at the top of the food
chain. What color is your dress?
Inside joke. And we're going to move on before I get hate mail.
Someday, I'm hoping I'll get to be the guest, and then I'll be more important than I am right now.
Right. We should have you on as a guest sometime.
I could be important then.
That could be funny. Okay, well, we should actually introduce our guest. This week we have George Hill, the Mad Ogre, joining us. So, George, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Outstanding. It is a pleasure and a privilege to be here. Looking forward to it. So.
Wow. Have you listened
obviously
to the show?
Obviously, first time on the show.
Yeah. why don't we start off, George, with you telling us a little bit about yourself, where you come from, what you do in guns, and then why don't you finish it off with what you've done in guns this week, because that's sort of what we do here. So
okay. Outstanding. Well,
You keep using these big words. I'm sorry.
It means good, Matthew.
Oh, carry on, thank George. You. Thank you.
You can explain it all to Trevor later. It's
Yeah.
Well, as is said, I'm George Hill. I am the Ogre from MadOgre.com. I've got one of the oldest continual running gun-related web blogs in existence. It was before it predates blogging, and it actually goes all the way back to the Hotbot homepages and Lycos homepages way back when at the dawn of internet time.
Wow. So you were blogging before blogging was cool.
Yes.
It's still not cool, but anyway, what year was that, George?
That was like 98, I believe, was when it started. 99, 98, some place, way back then. I don't even remember.
I don't even know if Owen was graduated from high school yet in 98.
I was 14.
So,
I was 16.
I've been writing for, a magazine here or two. I was writing for Concealed Carry Magazine for a long time. I've written for SWAT Magazine, and I've done some competitive shooting and a lot of casual shooting, a lot of hunting. And if it's something involving firearms, I've probably done it. And if it's a firearm more than a few years old, I've either shot it or I have owned it. I've had a lot of guns. I buy and sell guns. I don't know if I can cuss on your show, but the term gun slut was coined for me by Larry Correa.
I prefer Massad's take on it. He chooses to celebrate ballistics diversity.
There you go. That works.
That works, you know. Or, but gun slut, I guess, could, you know.
It's descriptive and probably more accurate.
See, I'm torn now. Am I bleeping that or am I not?
You've called me a harlot of the night many a time.
That's true. It's just, yeah. It's
which is
a harlot of the night sight.
Yeah. So, George, how did you get your – those are some of the things that you've done. How did you get your start in the firearms industry, so to speak? Either I think you've done some instruction as well. Do you have a military background or law enforcement background?
Well, I mean, if we're going to go way back when, in the Boy Scouts, when I was a young Boy Scout, getting my marksmanship merit badges, next thing you know, I'm helping teach the marksmanship merit badge, and it started there. When I turned 17, I enlisted, and ended up 11 Bravo infantrymen. Did that for a while. When I got out of that, I got into law enforcement. Went through the police academy for Colorado Post and also National Park Service Law Enforcement Ranger. And I dealt with that sort of career path until my wife. One day I asked my wife what she wanted for her birthday, and she says, "I want you to quit." So I got out of that and tried to get into you know, the technical field. Ended up working with some high-tech companies and you know, the whole, you know, the digital bubble burst, and you know, dealt with all of that crap, and got back into guns, got back into instructing. I've been pretty much a firearms instructor all my cognitive life, and you know, teaching people how to shoot pistols, rifles, shotguns. I mean, that's what I do. You know, I talk guns. I now talk guns professionally.
Wow.
Awesome. And promote guns professionally.
So I've where do we consulting. Send a check again for your appearance on the show? You say it's professional. I mean, we got to...
Don't worry. I'll invoice you.
Good. Yes. Oh, send that to trevorfurlott@gmail.com. That's where that goes.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, I've been consulting with some you know, with some of the gun companies on some confidential projects that don't see the light of day for years to come. But I've been doing that for enough years that I've seen guns that I've consulted with now hit the market, and it's been a lot of fun, a lot of satisfying experiences. And now I'm working for an outfit called Point Blank Range in South Carolina, and
Carolina. That's a name that's in the news a lot this week.
Yeah, and they had a little incident not too far from me, just about a 2 hour drive to get there. And, you know, if you want to talk about that little case, that is a case of straight-up murder. You'll see a video on YouTube or on the news repeatedly about an officer shooting an unarmed man as he was running away. In all cases, from my experience, that is a straight-up case of murder. So,
yeah, there was no shooting to stop a threat involved in that one.
Oh, no, not – no. And there's no fleeing felon scenario that could be justified either.
No, the malicious intent was there, making it murder.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's a shame that this happened, especially right on the heels of Ferguson. I mean, what was this cop thinking? I'm not even going to, you know, say his name, because screw that guy.
Yep.
You know, my heart goes out to the victim's family. You know, it's a terrible thing. But
yeah, that was a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there we went. That.
So, George, let's fast forward a little bit to your days in Utah. That's where we had our first experiences with the Mad Ogre, was through Gun Dudes. And I believe you're also an author. Is that correct? You've got a zombie series?
Yeah. You can let's roll that back there. That was at a Masada U Mag 40 class held in Utah. With the Gun Dudes that the Gun Dudes promoted and organized. And Joe Chetwood of Crusader Weaponry and I were invited honored guests of the Gun Dudes. And we had a great time. And we celebrated that time with Trevor there at a Brazilian barbecue grill.
Thank you so much for that experience. That was quite possibly the highlight of the trip.
Well, absolutely. Other than meeting me and Joe.
Well, meeting everybody, but who's counting? Carry on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's fantastic food. We don't have that here in South Carolina, and I miss that desperately. Oh, it's terrible. But, yeah, you can check out Uprising USA, Uprising UK, and Uprising Italia.
When's Uprising Canada? Ah, I love it.
Now, if you were to read the original Uprising USA thread on WeTheArmed.com, and you will only see that if you become a member of WeTheArmed.com and become a member and do a quick search for Uprising USA, you'll find that there is a angry Canadian that causes lots of problems for the heroes. And you'll have to read that yourselves. I'm not going to give away any spoilers. But
okay, well, where can we find
these? He goes nuts, and I kill him.
Well, sometimes that's the way it goes. So are these on Audible, Amazon? Where can people get these?
They're on Amazon, and Uprising USA is on Audible.com. And I recommend getting the Audible version because that way you don't see all the unedited typos. Because I found out the hard way that you do not pay your editor with beer before he edits.
No, you pay him with beer after.
Yep.
After. I learned that the hard way. So
Canadians know this because we pay for things in beer a lot. So you never give the guy the beer before the job, always after the job.
Yeah, you've got that barter system down. You know, yes. I'm Mormon. I don't even drink beer anymore. So, I was just rusty on that whole process. But lesson learned. But Uprising USA on Audible.com is fantastic. Then you can get UK, which is not yet on Audible. And then Uprising Italia. I'm working on Uprising Russia and Uprising China.
Awesome.
So, Uprising books coming.
Law enforcement, military, instructor, author. Yeah.
What haven't you done, I guess, is the next question.
Motorcycles, cooking.
I ride bikes. I'm working on some projects right now with Harley Davidson. That's in the works. But, what haven't I done? I've not won a match or taught a course in Canada yet. So,
oh, well.
But I have carried guns into Canada. So I'll just leave that there.
All right.
Excellent, I think.
Well, why don't we transition into what you did with guns this week? And then we'll continue on with the rest of us.
Fantastic. Well, this week, I dabbled my toes back into the world of IDPA type competition. And I did poorly, to be honest. I did poorly. I'll admit that. My shooting was great, but my shooting was slow. And, I think as kind of that, breaking the ice kind of thing, I think I did pretty well. And all I have to do is start upping my speed again, and I think I'm going to be just fine.
Well, as I understand it, IDPA isn't a blazing fast sport to begin with. You can't really shoot it the same way you shoot IPSC because you lose a lot of points if you don't take carefully aimed shots.
Exactly.
Starting off slow might not be a bad strategy to make sure that you, remember to focus on that front sight, get a clean trigger break, and then you can slowly bring up your speed while not losing your accuracy. Because I would be the complete opposite. I would just blaze through it at full speed and go, oh, I'm supposed to hit the middle?
Well, and that seems to be the strategy that works for a lot of people. They just go so fast that, the calculated time, they'll go ahead and add some deductions for points down, and they'll take that because, they ran through the whole stage in 10 seconds flat. They spray enough bullets that it doesn't matter if they hit a don't shoot target or miss the target completely because they're
so fast that it makes up for the difference. Yeah, but I think a properly planned stage or match would probably be a little bit, they'd be set up to kind of eliminate that. I know whenever Tommy talked about it, he was saying that some of the stages that we had set up IPSC style that we had shot IDPA sort of with him, he said, these are IPSC stages. These aren't IDPA stages. And if you make a proper IDPA stage, it doesn't matter how fast you go, the more accurate shooters usually is pretty much always going to win.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, ideally. Ideally.
There's going to be a line there.
Well, there's going to be a line, but you're not going to be able to just run through it at full speed and then be able to compete with somebody who goes through it at a moderate speed but takes his time to get the shots.
Yeah. And, and the most important thing, though, I shot it in a manner that was tactically sound. My accuracy was good, and I was shooting one of my favorite guns, the Beretta 92FS. So I enjoyed myself immensely, and that's really, for IDPA, there's no money involved. There's no prizes. There's no purse.
That's right. It's just fun.
Curious George.
Pardon?
That's funny. Curious George. George, I'm curious. Sorry. You say you shot it tactically sound. Did you incur any penalties for shooting it that way?
It's funny you mentioned that. I sure did on the first stage. IDPA has the rule that you do not reload until you run the gun dry. Well, going with my, tactical habits, I shot one series, moved behind cover to go shoot another series of targets. And during that transition between that cover, you know, I did a tactical reload. And, you know, hey, I was impressed with myself. That was a fast reload. But the judge caught that and called that a penalty of some sort. What was that, an 8-second penalty I incurred?
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah, so.
It's, the reason I asked is because Daniel Shaw tried shooting IDP a couple of times, and his sentiments are the same as yours. He shot it tactically and was penalized for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And you got to remember, you know, IDPA, it's a game. And if you go at it like a realistic training scenario, you're going to fail. And so technically I failed. So,
yeah, but that's the one that touts itself as being the most realistic shooting game. And then guys who train for a living and instruct for a living go out and shoot it tactically and they get penalized.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
but when it comes to shooting the gun to slide lock, I guess it's a different philosophy of training because the RCMP, for example, they always shoot slide lock. They never reload unless the gun's at slide lock. So I guess in IDPA would be their preferred game, I guess.
Well, you know, you fight as you train as you fight.
Exactly.
You know, I just have a different tactical theory than some folks.
Mm-hmm.
With Daniel Shaw, I want to go into a firefight with a full gun. So if I'm in a break in the firefight, if I'm up behind cover, I'm going to make sure my gun's topped off and ready to go the next time I have to engage a baddie.
That's right. If I'm going to a new position where I'm going to engage targets, I want to start my engagement with a full gun, not start the engagement and stop, give them an opportunity to return fire while I reload. If I can reload on the way to the next position to engage, why wouldn't I?
Exactly. So there are those differences between what's tactically sound and what works in a gun game. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like I said before, it's all about having fun. I enjoyed myself, and I don't think I'm going to change any of my bad habits. But, you know, at least I know if that had been a real fight, I may have gone home alive and unperforated, which is that's my goal in life.
Yeah, you want to go back with the exact same amount of holes you started with.
Exactly, because getting your ears pierced, you know, that one night in Vegas, I mean, you got to explain that stuff.
Exactly.
You don't want to do that.
Cool.
Awesome. All right, so Owen, why don't we move on to you? What did you do with guns this week?
Well, I did a little bit. Yesterday I went to the range with a friend, local friend here, and he was shooting his SKS, which needs some serious sight work. I've never seen a gun that far off.
Wow. Do the sights look like, do they appear to be off when you look at them on the rifle?
Well, the front sight, the front post looks to be off a little bit, but it at 100 yards, he was shooting probably, he must have been shooting 12 to 16 inches right and low in order to hit the piece of paper.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that is quite a bit off.
So we managed to get his windage kind of straightened out, but it's not lining up with the rear sight. It's a Russian SKS, and most people are familiar. They have the little slider adjustable sight, you know, so it's for your different elevations.
Yep.
But it wasn't really lining up. You know, the 100-yard mark wasn't really lining up with 100 yards. So that's something.
Could be different ammo, too.
Maybe, yeah. I think he was just, I don't know what he was using, just surplus stuff, I think.
Yeah, and did you confirm his sight picture to make sure he was actually sighting properly?
I did not, and I didn't shoot the gun either.
Right.
But he's got enough experience, I think.
Okay, he should know what he's doing then. Okay, cool.
And I shot my 308, just kind of playing around with it, not really doing anything too serious with it. And my Marlin. Then I got it in the mail today. I got a paracord sling that I'd ordered from a guy in Moncton area. So that's pretty nice. So I haven't figured out what I'm going to put it on yet.
So is that a sling? Well, obviously it's made out of paracord, but is it set up in such a way that if you're out in the woods and you need a bunch of rope, you can unwind it and you have a bunch of paracord?
I believe so. I haven't looked too closely at how it's manufactured, but I'm pretty sure that yes, you can do that. The outside, cool. There's kind of like an inside paracord piece and then an outside, and the outside one I think will come off.
Interesting. Cool. Yeah.
So yeah, it was. Anyway, I don't really have much for slings kicking around. So instead of just going buying a kind of normal leather one, I just said, well, I'll get something kind of unique. And then earlier in the week, I did a video for a listener, which we can talk about a little later because they sent an email into the show.
Oh, perfect.
And they were having grip questions, so I kind of did just a quick little video up for them on how to properly grip a semi-automatic pistol.
Cool.
So yeah, that's about it for me.
All right. Well, I actually was very, very unbusy this week. I did next to nothing. In fact, when I came into the show notes and saw that both you and Trevor had, you know, at least a list of things that you had done, I felt bad. And I went and loaded 20 rounds of 223 for Matt, who ran out of ammo. So
just to say you did something.
I did something with guns. I loaded a bunch of ammo. So Matt, if you're listening, I got 20 rounds of ammo for you for your hog hunter. And you can thank Owen and Trevor for being, you know, made, because otherwise I wouldn't have done it, but I felt bad. And so now you're getting your ammo. So there you go. You're getting some ammo, Matt. But that's literally all I did with guns this week. I did nothing else. So I'm going to ask Trevor what he did with guns.
Guns and archery. It was almost a 50-50 split this week. I actually wasn't. It was going back. I forgot to talk about it on last week's show.
Late. There's a cutoff.
It's like a statute of limitations, especially for archery stuff.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm a facilitator.
You're a philosophizer.
Yeah. I'm a facilitator for the coaching or the archery coach levels in Canada, and I was asked by our coaching coordinator for Archery New Brunswick to help teach a level one or instructor of beginner archers last weekend. So that was a lot of fun. I got to meet up with some new archers I hadn't met before, and some old archers or people that I've known for a while who wanted to become coaches. So and did a little bit of shooting while I was there as well. And then throughout the week, I processed some 30-06, 308, and 44 Magnum brass, and came across an issue with my RCBS dies. They look to be fairly old, but in good condition. They're the three die set. So there's the expander die that opens up the case mouth. There's a full length resize and decapping die. And then there's a bullet seat and crimp die, 2-in-1. I forgot to disassemble the dies and clean them before I started to use them. And that's always a good idea when you're buying secondhand dies, to inspect them and see if they're scratched or get any old case lube out of there or what have you. I didn't do that. And the first piece of brass that I ran through the die was incredibly hard, harder than anything I've ever resized, harder than 300 Win Mag or 30-06 or anything like that. Anyway, it was incredibly difficult to resize. And when the brass came out of the die, it was covered in grease. So that was a clue that I needed to get in there and degrease it and clean it and stuff. So I did that and tried resizing another one, and again, incredibly hard, and appeared to have little micro scratches into the brass. So I don't know what's up with that. I even tried lubing one. Same thing. Really, really hard. My buddy Mark, he has a three die set from Lee. So I borrowed his dies and tried it. And wouldn't you know, it worked perfectly. Yeah, I don't
Interesting.
Know.
Interesting. So what's...
Does it work hard going, like when you're... what press are you using this on?
A single stage Lee.
So when you're raising the... I don't even know what's the that base called. Yeah, the RAM. Is that when it's hard, or is it hard when you're pulling the RAM out, when you're pulling the brass out?
I say it's harder going into the die, but almost as hard coming out of the die. So I actually checked Owen to see if they were labeled correctly, if the label on the box matched the label on the die. And, yep, they're 44 Magnum / 44 Special. Same idea as a 38 Magnum 357, or 38 Special 357 Magnum. Same brass, just longer or shorter, right? So I don't know. It's too bad. They look like a nice set of dies, but I won't be using them. I'll just pick up a set of Lee, I guess, or an updated set of RCBS. I really don't know what the issue is, even after I cleaned it. Yeah, it really
is. Send them to Tommy.
That's a good call. I'll do that.
Yeah.
Here, Tom, get some dies for you. what else? loaded 100 rounds of 223 because I goofed up. I was at Canadian Tire and saw they had a box of 55 grain Hornady projectiles, and I had bought the VMAX projectiles from Canadian Tire in the past. It's all they had ever been carrying. I didn't bother to read the box. Oh, 223, 55 grain. I'll take that. I get home, and what was it? Full Metal Jacket. So they were supposed to be to make some hunting loads for my bolt gun, but anyway, I had just over 100 pieces of brass that was prepped and ready to go, so it worked out okay. I whipped those up one evening on the single stage press, same night as all that other stuff. And then bang my switch. Luke Giroux came by from bangswitchboutique.com with an older LHS holster that I had bought from him. Or he came over to tune or adjust a holster for me. I had purchased the M&P and the M&P Pro holsters from him, and the M&P holster didn't fit right. He tightened it, and it was too tight, and so he came and worked on it again. And by happy coincidence, Matthew?
Yeah.
The SR9 fits in it like it was made for it.
Nice.
Yeah. So, and actually, with the M&P Pro holster and the Ghost mag pouches, I can run on that one IPSC belt, because it's a Pro holster, it's longer. I can run my FN, FNS 9mm long slide in there, my M&P, and my Ruger, all off of the same belt, all with the same mag pouches.
Huh. Well, that's cool.
One. Yeah, I guess one gun belt does three guns. All the mags are the same. The way the mag pouches are set up with the Ghost, they don't use set screws to adjust the width and take up the slot. Like, it's an oversized mag pouch, and then you can go with a leaf spring for tension and set screws to take the play out, to take out the slack and make it form-fitting. Or you can use two leaf springs, one on the side and one on the back, and then you can just drop in any double-stack mag you want, and you're good to go. So it's if you're looking at buying IPSC gear and you have multiple guns, those Ghost mag pouches are definitely worth looking at because they're so universal. What else? Stacy. I got a Facebook message from Thomas after he got back from the Appleseed saying that Stacy was having some issues with her Glock 42, both with reliability and with accuracy. So we discussed the reliability issues. She was having stovepipes, but with a brand of ammo she had never used before. It never occurred with all the other types of ammo. This one particular ammo it was happening with. The gun's still fairly new, may still need a little bit of break-in time, but it is a Glock after all. And so 380, right? It's not exactly. I don't have a lot of experience with 380, but when it worked with all the other previous brands of ammo and it just doesn't want to work with this one brand of ammo, I'm not overly concerned about it. Just go back to trying the other ammo. And as far as grip goes, instead of doing a video like what Owen did, we actually got on Skype. She had her gun, I had my gun, and I could demonstrate how to hold it, and then she would try it and show it to me, and we kind of worked through it that way over a Skype call, so it was pretty cool. I did something similar with Kyle Marconi when he got his CZ, how to set up his IPSC belt and stuff. So Skype, not just for college kids. What else? And then I shot some archery. Had a practice day on Monday, and then the club had a little mini 3D shoot on Tuesday night. And this weekend I'll be competing in the Target Provincials and the 3D Provincials on Saturday and Sunday. And then cool. The bow will get put away for the summer, and it'll be all about handguns.
Well, I'll come shoot that with my handgun. That's allowed, right?
Yeah, if you can get an ATT to the archery tournament, I say go for it.
Well, I could just write my own.
It's a,
I think it, I'm, I'll authorize myself, and then I'm good to go.
Yeah. Sure. I'll do your equipment inspection because I am an archery judge as well.
There you go. And, yes, this passes muster. Where's your string again? It's this box-shaped thing that I stick into the grip. Oh, yes, that looks like a string to me.
Yes, it does. Yeah. You're going to be in the advanced category, not the primitive category.
Definitely.
Oh, and of course I had to take, oh man, me and my big mouth, right? So there was a two moving targets. One was a wheel with two animals on it, and it would turn and 360 degrees, one big circle, and you would let one arrow fly at one animal, load your bow, and then shoot at the other animal. And then there was like two animals on a teeter-totter. One was a turkey, and on the other end of the pendulum was, not a pendulum, but the lever, was a fox. and I just got the fox in the spine. I let the arrow go at the wrong time when he was going down instead of up and hit him in the spine. So I step off the line. And I say, well, geez, if I'm going to shoot like that, I might as well be shooting a longbow. There's like 15 guys shooting longbows and only 7
So what kind of bow were you shooting?
I shoot a PSC compound bow, a Bow Madness 34.
Nice. I've got a Firestorm, the Firestorm Light myself.
Who makes that?
PSC.
Oh, cool. Firestorm.
Yeah.
Part of the main line or the pro line?
I'm going to have to say maybe it's an older line, but oh, okay. It's a compact, compact cool. Hunting compound, 70 pounds.
Oh, brute. No wonder your shoulder's killing you.
Yeah, well, you know.
70 pounds at your draw length, that arrow would just be, well, I mean, it would go faster than a 45 ACP for sure.
Oh, you want to go ahead and jump into the 1911?
No, we'll get there. We'll get there. Wait for it. Get your crib notes out. We're going to need them.
Get your digs in while you can.
All right, that's it for me, Matthew. What else we got going on?
All right, upcoming events. 5th annual charity shoot is June 27th. Make sure you come on out to that. It's going to be awesome. The para course with Tommy, July 3rd, that's full. But the IDPA mini match on July 4th is open to all. So come on out. Just have a handgun with a holster that covers a trigger guard. I think 9mm is the smallest caliber you can use.
Yeah.
SummerSlam is coming up August 8th and 9th. Registration is open and slowing down, Trevor? Like our
25.
25 left? Okay, so 25 left.
No, 24, sorry.
Look at that. And in a second, it'll be 23.
No, I just forgot that I took one last night at the... I went to my gun club meeting last night. That was, yeah.
All right.
Fun.
Cool.
Updates later.
Don't forget about the annual general meetings coming up. The NFA one is May 23rd and 24th in Quebec City, and the CSSA one is starting at 10 o'clock in the morning on May 30th at the Ottawa Conference and Event Center. Also, One Shot Tactical is they're going to be hosting the Ontario IDPA Provincial Championship. It's a Tier 2, and it'll be held August 15th. Starts at 9 o'clock in the morning. Check out www.2015opc.com for more info if you want to look into participating in that. And Trevor, you have a bit of an upcoming event for us that we're going to maybe cover in more depth next week, but why don't you kind of give the listeners a bit of a tease?
I will. Next week, we'll have a gentleman by the name of Cyclone on. Some of you may know who that is. That's his CGN handle.
And the interesting thing is we have not yet confirmed this with Cyclone. So
yes, we have.
Oh, we have. Oh, it was funnier my way. Oh,
you guys were just the last to know.
Okay.
So Daniel Bolosky will be on next week. Hopefully, we'll get a little bit of an update on his court case. I'm not sure if it's been resolved yet. But the primary focus of having him on next week will be to discuss the Keep Calm and Make It Rain fundraising campaign that's going on. You can go to www.gofundme.com/rain initiative to donate. And what they're collecting money for is a new gun range in Southern Ontario. So more details next week from Dan. He can get into all the particulars of what they're going to offer and what their goals are. And but in the meantime, if you'd like to see another range happen, please head on over there to GoFundMe/rain initiative and donate so that they can get another range going in Southern Ontario.
Cool. All right. Well, I look forward to talking with Daniel next week.
Always. Yeah.
Always. Yeah. He's a cool guy. Owen, you've been quiet for far too long. Why don't you bring us our news story this week?
Okie dokie, this is from CBC News.
Boo. 23.
You have to do the little musical thing, too. Down, down, down. And now, from CBC News in Ottawa, Owen Flewelling.
Right. Sorry, I guess I don't listen to the CBC
News.
Yeah,
I listen to it far too much because I know how it sounds. Yep. It's how I wake up in the morning, actually. My alarm clock goes off, and it's CBC, and it's always the news, and so I always hear that. And then I obviously get up and smash my radio, and I have to get another one every day. But.
So let George in. George, CBC is our state liberal media.
I figured it's something like, you know, BBC, except...
Canada.
except Canadian, yeah.
So. We don't have to pay for it.
Well, we do pay.
Well,
for
we do
it,
through our taxes.
Yeah, your taxes are paying.
Yeah, but the BBC is a private corporation, and they have government approval to make you pay for it. And if you don't pay for it, they send their compliance officers to your house. Oh yeah, it's bad.
At least it's not, you know, compulsory watching it. That, you know, it mandate that you have to watch their state sponsored program.
Don't give them any ideas.
But anyone with a TV in Britain needs to pay. If you own a TV that's hooked to an antenna, you absolutely have to pay this private corporation tax. It's like a different world over there.
That is insanity.
Yep, it is insanity.
That is insanity. So even if it's like in your closet, the fact that you have it, you have to pay the tax.
Yep.
If it's hooked to anything that receives a signal, if you want to use it for a monitor, that's fine. But the second you hook it to an antenna, you have to pay.
Oh, I would chuck it out the window into the street and say, hey, let my tax money pay to clean that up. So
yeah, I would chuck it at the compliance officer who knocked on my door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We're done complaining about the UK at this point. Let's have Owen read us this email or this news story.
All right. 23-year-old Nova Scotian man has beaten a charge of attempted murder after he shot a man who was driving towards him. Kevin Joshua Neal was charged with attempted murder and six other offenses arising from an incident in the early morning hours of August 6, 2011. He shot at Matthew Scott Berry, as Berry appeared to be trying to run him down. In reviewing the evidence, Justice Cacone?
Just own it, whatever you want it to be. He's not listening.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, Justice... yeah, I don't know. What is that?
I would call it Cacione. Caccioni, maybe.
Caccioni? Justice Caccioni. Yeah, I don't know.
Cajone? Same with how... It's not Cajone, I'll tell you that.
Say it with an Italian accent.
Spaghetti.
Justice Caccioni.
There you go. Nailed it. We could just call him the judge.
Whoever this judge was, he wrote how Barry drove to Neil's home that day after he and some friends had been drinking. The court heard how one of Barry's friends started an angry exchange with Neil on his front lawn. Things deteriorated to the point where Barry drove towards Neil. At one point, Neil went into his home and retrieved a rifle and fired a shot at Barry, hitting him in the face. Shot in the face.
Shot him in the face.
The judge ruled that Neil acted in self-defense and so is not guilty of attempted murder or any of the other charges he faced.
And slow clap for him.
So lucky, because he went in, got the gun, and came back out. When he's in the house, he's not in danger anymore. Lock the door, get the gun, call the cops. He took the gun.
But maybe somebody else was outside that he had to go out and protect. We don't have all the details.
Yeah, like I said, he's lucky.
Yeah. But it's, you know, slow clap for the judge, though. I mean, he saw that, you know, a legitimate firearms use for self-defense.
He shouldn't have had to go back inside to get his gun. He should have just been able to have his gun.
He should have been able to just have it, yep. So, cool. All right. Well, thank you, Owen, for reading that. And
my pleasure, Matthew.
Look, I should have warned you so you could have gone ahead and practiced Caccioni's name, but I'm sorry. It didn't happen. But good job. Nevertheless, we're going to move into our main topic, and this is 1911s this week. Trevor's favorite topic.
Yeah, that's why I keep asking for it.
He owns a couple of those, doesn't he?
I think he does.
Actually, he does not.
Yeah, no. I think he just doesn't want to admit. I mean, maybe they're Lexuses as opposed to Toyotas, but it's still made by the same company.
I'd still rather have the Toyota.
kidding, Trevor. We know. Don't explain it again. We know.
Well,
George.
Let's say why George is here. It was my idea to bring George on because, as you know, George, we're not fans.
I've picked up on that.
Okay. It's not that we hate them so much as we despise them.
Trevor's a closet fan. You know, he won't admit that he's a fan.
And Owen actually owns one.
Yeah. And I, you know what? I handled one yesterday when I was at the gun store here in town, and I felt dirty. Oh, I felt I had to come home. I felt like I cheated on my Glocks.
Exactly.
It was awful.
Exactly. So
and I didn't even shoot it. I just picked it up and I held it, and I was just like, oh, I'm defiled now.
I mean, we had Jeff Reese from the Calgary
Shooting. This is a biased jury. I am in trouble.
It is, but I think you're probably the most qualified to speak in defense of this ancient, antiquated technology. We had Jeff Reese on from the Calgary Shooting Center several months ago to talk about, because he's converted. He was a Glock guy. He bought an SR 1911, and now he's switched. But you've been a champion of the 1911 platform for quite some time, and so I thought, who better to come on and defend it and try and convince us that it still has a place in today's world of polymer.
And reliability, really. Wouldn't you?
Yeah. So go ahead, George. I tell you what. Why don't I start off with giving you my top criticisms of the platform, and then you can go ahead and counter them and see if you can convince us. And I know that Owen and Matthew share these concerns with me.
Okay. Feel free to go through the Glock talking points.
No, it has nothing to do with Glock. We're not here to talk about Glock. We're here to talk about how the 1911 is A, overpriced, B, heavy,
okay,
C, requires more maintenance than the average pistol, and as a result, the common user not being able to maintain it properly causes reliability issues, low capacity, mm-hmm, and high parts count.
Those are the main points,
enough,
really.
You know.
Okay. Before we go on, let me ask you guys. Let's ask the panel here. Ask the men of the jury. How many of you guys have an AR-15 type rifle?
Ooh, yeah, that'd be all of us.
That would be all of you.
Yeah.
Okay, wait a second. Doesn't that rifle have a lot of parts? Doesn't that rifle require particular maintenance routines above and beyond, say, more robust designs like an AK?
Not if you get a piston.
Yeah, but do you have a piston one?
Doesn't that just increase the number of parts, though?
It does, and none of us have piston-powered ARs, so that kind of...
Only because I'm too cheap. All the modern guns have pistons.
Basically, what I'm getting at is, the AR-15 is well-known for requiring more maintenance than most other rifles.
You're right, and you know what? In that regard, I will sit myself on the fence.
So the
I won't come to your side yet, but I'll sit on the fence.
Right, let me say this. If you look at the military rifles used globally, the AR has such a small part of that demographic that it's laughable in compared to the AK. Why do you suppose the AK is so prolific around the world as opposed to the AR? The AK has 8 moving parts.
I can tell you why, and let's see if George backs me up on this. It's because the Berlin Wall fell, or the Iron Curtain fell, and a bunch of gun running happened, and AKs got sold all over the place, whereas the U.S. is a bit more careful in letting their guns get out of the country and into the hands of enemy combatants.
Yeah, they just still.
Mexican cartel.
We've also seen, though, that AR-15s are now being made in Russia.
Hmm.
And AR-15s have been adopted in some forms, by the Chinese. The Chinese have AR-15s as well.
Your argument's invalid, because just because one gun has a lot of parts doesn't mm-hmm. mean that all guns should have a lot of parts.
Right, but
have a design with a lot of parts that works, and okay, another design with a lot of parts that...
Is this the view? Talking over?
He does that. Right.
This is going to get heated, but go
so
on.
So you guys are giving the AR-15 a pass, yet holding the 1911 accountable for the same sins.
Not necessarily.
We are. I'm with George. I'm with George. Well, we are.
I personally don't care how many parts the gun has. When Trevor says we agree with him on, I think it was a bit of a generalization, because my issues with the 1911 have nothing to do with the number of parts in them.
Okay. Let's go on. The maintenance routine. The AR-15 requires a little bit more attention to detail in maintaining it and cleaning it.
That being said, I will jump back on the other side of the fence here, because I can attest to Owen having fired his AR-15 and not cleaning it for 2 years?
Yeah, I've put thousands of rounds through it, and I've cleaned it once.
And it's never malfunctioned, as far as I know. So
I just don't think we're here to talk about the AR.
No,
you'd make an excellent politician. You're trying to sidestep here.
No, he's not. No, he's trying to make a comparison.
The same sense. Now, the 1911, though, yeah, it requires a little bit more attention and has a couple of extra parts that you know, other common service pistols nowadays do not have. But however, there is some things about the 1911 that makes it, let's say, elevate above the common, you know, the commonality of parts, the ergonomics, the looks, the feel of it. The gun is beautiful. And everything that you've said against the 1911, well, there's versions of the 1911s that counter those arguments, such as the weight. Well, you know, we've got the airweight frames. The Smith & Wesson scandium-framed 1911 PD series are absolutely fantastic. A lightweight commander is
a beautiful
thing.
Well, that'll take me back to my cost argument then. If you're going into scandium frames and airweight frames, they're going to cost even more than a steel frame. The gun costs over $1,000 and requires a 1,000-round break-in period on average.
No, that's an exaggeration. I mean, yeah, I know you guys are confused on this because, you know, Glock barrels are rifled backwards up there in Canada. But the fact is, I mean, you can get a good 1911 from most of the manufacturers for well under $1,000. We're talking between, you know, $700 to $500 for a lot of them.
Well, that's American. Yeah, those are 1911s in America, and we should differentiate that up here in Canada, we would never find those. Mm-hmm. Not at those prices, just not because everything adds $200 when it crosses the border, basically.
Well, we do have two cheap options, Matthew. We've got the Norinco, we've got the...
sure, but those aren't the same league as the $600 to $700 ones he's talking
Springfield
about.
Springfield Armory's 1911s are between $600 and $700 up here.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know,
ones in the Philippines.
The Springfield Armory 1911s are one of my favorites. So if you're getting a Springfield Armory 1911 at about the same price that I'm getting it at, we're talking around that $700 for the mil-spec, that gives you a fantastic platform. With a lifetime warranty, at least down here in the lower 48, we've got the lifetime warranty on those Springfields, and those are absolutely fantastic. So we got cheap options. We've got...
okay, but it's still heavy and still has limited capacity.
Options. You can get high capacity 1911s, STI.
That's not a 1911.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, be careful here, George. Trevor, not single stack and if it's not your classic, then it's not a 1911 to Trevor.
Well, here's the thing. Saying 1911 is like saying pickup truck.
There you go. I'm with George.
I drive a pickup truck. That doesn't tell me a dang thing about what you're actually behind the wheel of, because you could have extended cabs, dualies, extended beds, short beds, pre-runners, scorched trophy type trucks. I mean, truck. There's a full whole industry, automotive industry behind those pickup trucks. Same thing as the 1911.
I think the purists would disagree with you.
Yeah, but we're not talking purists here, Trevor,
yes,
I guess.
We're talking about the classic quintessential 1911, the single stack.
Well, I don't remember specifying that with George before we started
talking.
Okay,
now you're redefining the arguments. It's like playing Dungeons and Dragons with
I thought it was clear before we started. We were talking about 1911s in their purest form.
Okay. See, George,
I won't restrict you to Colt, but you know, a 1911 is a single stack 45 ACP. That's the gun.
So as long as your arguments are defined by guns that fit within your parameters.
They're not my parameters, George. I didn't invent the gun.
neither did Springfield Armory or Kimber or Norinco. But, you know, they've refined the gun. The gun has gone through so many evolutions.
And yet still has a grip safety.
Still has a grip safety in most of them. Some of the evolutions does away with the grip safety as a redundant feature. You know, like the Detonics, you know, my Detonics Combat Masters, I've never had one that had a grip safety on it. And that is still a 1911. Because of the mechanics, because of the commonality of parts, that is still a 1911, and it's very different in size and feature than a regular run-of-the-mill GI 1911, but it's still a 1911, just like a Toyota 4Runner or a Toyota Tacoma is still a pickup truck, just like a Ford F-150 is. If you want to talk about that quintessential pickup truck, Well, you're going to have to, you know, go back way back in time, you know, generations ago, just like the 1911. But here's the thing about that old 1911. You take that old GI style 1911. It is still a thing of beauty. It's a work of art. And the genius of John Moses Browning when he designed it back in 1907, and it went through an evolutionary process during the military trials until 1911 when it was finally adopted. Very different guns from the beginning of the trial to the end of the trial, but they're still 1911s, you can say, and they're still works of art. And when you pick one up, you get a sense of history that you don't get really in any other firearm, unless you're talking about an old Enfield rifle or an old Webley revolver or a Colt Peacemaker. That 1911 has a sense. It's truly an American gun, which I can appreciate you Canadians not really digging that so much. But I know a lot of Canadians have used 1911s in conflicts. So
we still use a John Moses Browning design. Our troops carry the high power. I'd sooner see them carrying a Beretta like your troops do, but and some branch of the military have gone back to a 1911. I guess they wanted less bullets, but that's fine.
Well, you know, there's the whole argument that, well, with a 45, you don't need as many shots. I'm with you guys on the capacity. I do like more rounds than less. But I'm also a believer in there's no replacement for displacement, which is an old hot rodder's mantra. But it works very well in combat handgunnery because expansion, when you get it, is nice, just like icing on a cake is nice. But the whole point of it is the cake, not the icing.
Right. And I mean, well, with today's 9mm ammo, we know that the difference between a 45 and a 9mm is negligible. And I could probably shoot five 9mm in the time it would take somebody to shoot three 45s. And three is more than five. So five bullets doing almost the same amount of damage, virtually no difference. Compared to three bullets, I'll take the five bullets doing almost the same amount of damage as those.
Yeah. Unfortunately, though, that is if that new modern ammo does in fact expand. If you get that expansion, and granted, yeah, it's the bullets are much more reliable. You've got the Hornady, in which I carry in my Beretta 92FS. I might add the Hornady critical duty loads.
That's what I have in my Glock.
Fantastic round.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not going to disparage that round at all. But you know what? If I got that same projectile, the Hornady critical duty loads in my 45, you know, well, hey, I'm just as happy as a clam. It's a good round. And I appreciate the fact that it starts out at 45 diameter instead of having to expand to 45 diameter. So it's,
not that I want to turn this into a caliber debate, but the FBI is going back to the 9 for a reason.
Well, the FBI is not a gun shooting community anymore. It's a organization of accountants and lawyers who can't handle the 10mm in a solid steel, you know, Smith & Wesson 1066. You know, whatever those pencil necks are doing has nothing to do with me and what I like and what I'm comfortable with.
That, I mean, I think you'll agree that was a big honking platform and a pain to carry. That was not a compact size gun.
No, it wasn't. And as much as I like to tweak the FBI's nose and how much they do keep track of what I do and say all the time, I love you guys. No hard feelings.
I don't think they listen, but you never know.
Well, they because I'm on your show, I guarantee you they're listening.
Oh, they'll listen this week, huh?
So,
well, hi, Fox. Hi, Mulder and Scully.
George, I'm hearing a lot of the usual arguments for the 1911, and that is it's good looking, it feels good in the hand, there's a lot of historical bravado behind it.
Yeah,
these aren't things that make a good carry gun. What it looks like, well, and my history behind it.
My favorite 1911 platform is going to be the what's called the lightweight Commander. So it is a lighter weight frame, it's a little bit shorter in the barrel, and it carries exceptionally well. And when I come out of the holster and get onto target, it points in a manner that's precognitive. I don't even have to really look at the sights, look at the gun. I just look at the target, bring the gun up, and it's on. It allows you to make that first shot out of the buzzer very quickly, very precisely, which is why most competition guns are based off of the 1911 platform of some sort. I know the Glock's making inroads big time, and you know the Smith & Wesson's making inroads, the M&P series, but still, it's most competition shooters are a it's a 1911 game.
Yeah, the number one open gun platform in the world of competition is based on the 1911 grip angle design. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether it be an STI or an SVI or mm-hmm. even SIG is making a double stack gun for Max Michel. Mm-hmm. I don't think you or I could buy it, but he has basically what looks like an STI with SIG written on it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, whether it's the grip angle that attracts competition shooters to that platform.
It's also the mechanics of the trigger, the barrel package. Those are what makes the 1911 the 1911. But just like that pickup truck, you can't really define specifically what makes something a pickup truck and what doesn't, because you know, there's so many variants, just like the 1911. So you have to say the 1911 style gun or the 1911 platform. Because if you're talking about the GI style gun from World War II, we've come a long way, baby. You know,
and actually, I like that one. If I was going to go out tomorrow and buy a single stack 1911, I want something as true to the original design as possible. I want that thing to rattle because that's the one that was reliable. I don't want those sights, mind you. I'll take the trigger, and they've got a better beaver tail on them now. But the 1911 that's been copied by, you know, dozens and dozens of manufacturers that end up being overpriced, and they tightened up the tolerances so much that the guns don't run. You need to replace the springs after an average of 5,000 rounds generally. Just
I do that in most all my guns. Don't you?
No. I haven't had the let me think back now.
Well, the difference here, George, is we don't carry our guns for self-defense, so we don't need to rely on them. As much. I mean,
I want my competition gun to go bang every time much as I would.
We want all of our guns to go bang every time. And I just think, though, that if we were allowed to carry them, we might put a bit more forethought into that. We might actually be changing all our springs out at 5,000 rounds, even in our Glocks and whatnot,
we don't need to go into the details of the metallurgical sciences and things like spring fatigue. But you do want to change your springs, you know, every so often, just like I do on my AR-15. I change my recoil spring. I change, you know, my hammer springs if it's feeling weird. I'll change springs in all my guns because I want to make sure that my gun is tip top.
Yeah.
You know, even my 870 pump actions get springs changed out because I want to make sure that it's going to be something I can rely on. But you know, that's a whole other discussion.
Right. You're also a big proponent of the shotgun.
Oh, I love the shotgun.
The heavy gun with limited capacity.
So 1911s and shotgun sort of go together.
Yeah, yeah.
I also like revolvers. You're not a revolver fan?
Trevor is a bit of a revolver fan. I'm not really.
I own two.
I'm gonna throw this statement down, and you can choose to be offended or not. But if you don't like revolvers, all your taste is in your mouth. You're talking about the original repeating handgun here. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. It's a mechanical work of art. You got to appreciate it for what it is and where it came from.
Sure, and that's all fine and good, but if you look at my gun collection, it's very utilitarian. Nothing looks pretty, nothing's old, nothing's antique, I didn't buy anything because it looked good or because it had a history. All of my guns just simply need to work. That's it. They need to hit what I'm aiming at.
We appreciate guns for different reasons, for sure.
And I can totally respect that, but when you transcend necessity, you can get into the
aesthetic. You lost them right there.
I'm gone. But no, I do hear exactly what you're saying, and it's the difference between the guys who ride, just a Honda Goldwing versus someone who rides a Harley. You know, the guy who rides the Honda wants a bike that works, that's going to start every morning and get him to where he wants to go. The guy that rides the Harley wants a bike that he's going to appreciate, he's going to work on, he's going to tinker with it. It might not always get him where he wants to go, but that's not the point.
And it's funny you mention that, because I used to ride nothing but Hondas and then transitioned into some other bikes. And hey, I've been working with Harley-Davidson lately. So there's an evolution of from that necessity. I mean, we went from a necessity society into the Renaissance, you know, when people learned farming techniques that meant people didn't have to spend all their day in a mud field.
Right.
So then we can, you know, when you guys up in Canada come out of that mud field and you can appreciate, you know, the Renaissance of firearms and appreciate the aesthetics and the art and the nature and the history of things like a fine revolver and a 1911, then you guys will know you have truly become a civilized society.
Oh, okay.
Don't lump all of Canada into the taste of these three hosts. You are going to get some serious hate mail. Keeping in mind that I have two revolvers and what you would call a 1911 that I call a 2011, because it's a bit of an ongoing joke. But I don't.
So gentlemen, you are a man of astute taste and class and sophistication. I tip my hat to you, sir.
Well, and here's one thing we didn't really cover, and I don't want to be the guy that brings up a positive attribute of the 1911. And we did sort of touch on it, but I think it's important to mention that the trigger on the 1911
is... You know that we're on the con side, right, buddy?
I know. Right? But so look, I want to give this a fair shake here, and I know the listeners are screaming at the radio saying, why aren't you talking about the awesome trigger?
It's his job to talk about it, and if he doesn't bring it up, it's a win for us. What are you... You're never going to come to court with me, I'll tell you that right now.
Your I just Honor, want to make sure that we're fair.
The prosecution forgot to mention was my client was not wearing gloves, and you should go back and check for prints. Thanks, buddy.
Now, just keeping things fair here. So anyway, yeah, that is something that I think the 1911 does have going for it. You did mention the ergonomics. It is very, definitely a very pointable gun, and the trigger on it is fantastic, which will lead to, in my opinion, improved and increased accuracy.
But now ask Owen. Owen, do you think it's pointable?
Sorry, do I think what?
That the 1911 is pointable?
Goodness, no.
Yeah, see, he...
When I handled that one yesterday, I did, you know, I brought it up as to take a sight picture, as you know, as I would if I was going to shoot a target, and I would have, like, I would have shot the floor in front of me.
Really?
Yeah, because when I take a grip, the Glock grip is more angled, has a greater angle, so the front of the gun points down with a 1911.
Okay, so because you're used to the Glock grip angle, you're saying the 1911 is wrong.
No, I'm just saying that that's why I don't like 1911s, because I prefer the greater angle. I had a SIG copy, a Norinco SIG copy, before my Glock, and it was like the 1911, more of an upright, you know, I don't even know what to call it. Upright grip is what I call it, but
the
grip angle was more like a 1911, and when I switched to the Glock, I shot better.
Mm. No, it's interesting.
And see, that's the great thing about the whole gun industry in this generation, is that there's so many options and there's so many variables that you can get something that fits you the way you like it, and that's a fantastic thing. I mean, we say, you know, you say bacon, we say ham. I mean, it's whatever you like and you're comfortable with. I mean, that's the fantastic thing about it. But
yeah, so you had said, George, that because it didn't fit his hand right, he would say that it's wrong. And I agree with where you're going right now. No grip angle is necessarily wrong. It's what grip angle works best for your natural point of aim.
Exactly. And really, quite honest, what you're used to. Because, I mean, you train yourself. We train ourselves how to hold things like different diameter pins, different mice on our computers. You know, we train ourselves. So we can get used to anything. The human being is a very remarkably adaptable creature. So you adapt to what your norm is. And then you have something that comes in outside of your norm. And it's going to take you a little while to adapt to it. Like when I first got into Glocks, after a long time, I mean, I did buy a Glock 17 way back in the day, but it was about 6 years ago, I bought a Glock 23. And it took me a while to get used to that, you know, to that Glock grip angle. But after I adapted to it, I was very, very used to it, and it was very pointable to me. And then it gave me a little stutter step going back to the 1911. But, you know, the trigger mechanism, just like a Glock, you can swap out parts and make that trigger feel exactly how you want it to.
Oh, more so. More so.
Yeah.
I've done all kinds of tuning work on Glock triggers, my own and other guys in my club. the Glock trigger parts for aftermarket high performance stuff cost much more than 1911s, and you can't get away with as much.
Mm-hmm. Right. But the 1911, once you know how to take apart a 1911 to pull out the main spring housing, pull out the springs, pull out the hammer, the sear. I mean, once you get into the mechanics like you do a Glock, granted a Glock is simpler, you can do all of that same stuff with a 1911. There's a myriad of options out there for it. So you can
I still can't figure out how to take the GSG I have. I can't figure out how to take it apart. I've been trying for 2 years now. I can't figure it out.
I'm sure there's a video on YouTube somewhere.
There probably is.
Yeah. I mean,
if I cared enough to go look it up, then I probably.
But you know, the 1911. Let's be honest, the 1911 is not for everybody. Just like the Glock is not for everybody.
I think I would counter that by saying almost anybody could pick up a Glock and shoot it with and use it for a self defense gun in the home or whatever without having to worry about maintaining it and taking care of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the greatest attributes the Glock has is you put bullets in it. And it works. Mm-hmm. Whereas the 1911, you put ammo in it, and it usually works.
Don't forget the safety.
You put ammo.
Oh, and grippage is right.
You have a safety lever. Really, operationally, the only difference between a Glock and a 1911 is you have this manual safety on the back.
Right.
The grip safety is transparent. If you're holding the gun, the grip safety is off.
That's right.
No.
But you have that manual safety on the side. And then let's say we're using these guns in competitions where you're trying to do problem solving, or in a defensive situation where you're trying to do problem solving on top of legal liability and, you know, what's in the foreground, what's behind your target, you know, knowing your target and all that jazz. I mean, you're talking about all of this stuff that you've got to process, but a simple thumb safety is too much for you?
How many, George, now come on. George, be fair. You're an instructor. How many times have you seen people forget to disengage the holster when a buzzer goes off? Disengage the safety out of the holster when a buzzer goes off, rather. And how many new shooters have you seen pick up a 1911 and not grip it correctly and not disengage the grip safety? You've seen that. You know you've seen that.
I have seen that.
Haven't seen it with a Glock, though, have you?
Well, I've seen a lot more negligent discharges with Glocks.
At least it's discharging.
you've got me there.
Well, I think, George, you're never going to convince this panel in entirety. I'll sit a little closer to the fence, and I'll give you that the 1911 has a much better trigger. I'll give you that it definitely has a better history, and it definitely is more aesthetically pleasing. I'll definitely give you those. But I do want to thank you for coming on and talking about this with us. Do you have anything, any last words you want to say to kind of stick it to Trevor before we move on to listener feedback? Because he's definitely stuck you a few times, I'm just saying.
Anyway, no, guys, this was a lot of fun. I enjoy talking guns. So, yeah, whether or not you agree, at least we agree to disagree. And
Whoa, I ain't agreeing to nothing.
Yeah,
that's just kidding. No, it really is fun talking guns, even if it is 1911s. And you know, I'm staring at a teardown poster of one here that Filthy got for all of us hosts. And you know, it for what it is, it's a neat gun. And I don't think anybody will ever be able to argue that it's an ugly gun or you know, not a classic. It definitely is. It's just
I think
you know, like a Harley Davidson. If you want a gun that is along the lines of a Harley that you work on, you tweak, you enjoy, you appreciate, that's your gun. But if you want to get to work every single day, you got to get the Honda, and that's the Glock. Or similar.
Or the Walther PPQ.
Right, or similar. Yeah, any sort of polymer striker-fired gun, I think, would be... but anyhow, I think that was a fantastic discussion. And we are going to move on to some listener feedback now, and I invite you to stick around, George, and maybe you'll have some answers for some of these questions too, because one of them actually talks a little bit about concealed carry. So,
okay,
it'll be interesting to hear your take on that. So, why don't we start off with Owen bringing us the first email, and get ready, Trevor, you'll be taking the second.
Can I read the second one?
Okay, Trevor, you're up.
This first one comes to us from Robert. He says, just had a quick question for you guys. I received a LinkedIn invitation from Trevor last week, and confusing him with another Trevor, I added him. While going through his profile, I was genuinely surprised by the number of contacts that I recognized from the Canadian firearms community. I wondered to myself why he had never mentioned this and how we may be able to reconnect. Then I recognized my error, and everything made far more sense. As I am finishing my degree this semester, I am curious about your opinion on how much a person should advertise their interest in firearms while looking for jobs. Most resumes contain a section on hobbies and organizations you are a part of, and I could list my shooting hobby as well as NFA and CSSA memberships. I'm currently residing in Toronto, but I'm sure that will not be relevant.
Sure, no, that's not relevant at all.
Thanks and keep up the good work. P.S. I keep hearing you mention the name Double Odd Buck. That name seems to ring a bell, like maybe from a podcast, that he is long overdue for fresh content. I'm sure that is not it, though, as Canadian podcasters never disappoint, and it would be disappointing if this person had stopped podcasting. Well, there's your cheap shot, Chris. You are long overdue. As far as LinkedIn is concerned, Robert, I apologize that you received a request. I received a request from somebody in the Canadian firearms community, Jeff Reese from the Calgary Shooting Center. If you don't shop there, you are a communist. And so I thought, well, it's about time, because it wasn't the first time I got a request. So I signed up for LinkedIn, not knowing what I was getting myself into, not familiarizing myself with the privacy settings or working on my profile. And this thing sent a friend request, or whatever they call it in LinkedIn, to everybody in my email, everybody in my Facebook.
And multiple times, I might add.
Yeah.
So, I only got one request, and I added you.
Multiple requests in a row. I obviously was not fast enough on the trigger for Trevor to, you know, to connect with him on LinkedIn, because it was like, you know, Trevor wants to connect with you.
But here's the thing, Owen. Trevor wants to connect with you.
Trevor wants to connect with you. Trevor wants to connect with you. I'm like, all right, I'll connect with you. God.
LinkedIn wanted to connect with you. Trevor didn't give a crap. Trevor has since killed this account and buried it and sent it to hell because of this annoying feature and people like Owen getting annoyed by receiving multiple requests over and over again. Rather than go in and figure out a new social media, I shut it down. I did talk it over with our buddy Luke Giroux. He's actually been contacted by potential employers based on his LinkedIn profile. So it does have professional value. What's that, George?
As have I.
There you go.
Which is why I've not deleted it, even though I very rarely touch it. I am alerted if a message comes through. But LinkedIn is, it's a thing. And I'm reluctant to delete the account, although I want to. I'm not going to because of that. I do get valuable contacts.
So what about his question where how appropriate is it to include your interest in firearms?
I would keep it.
I just want to comment on this because I think it really depends on the situation, the type of job, and where you live.
If you're applying for a firearms instructor job, perhaps it's a good idea.
Yeah, I would tailor the resume for the position. But as far as what people can see, because employers creep Facebook, and they were definitely going to creep your LinkedIn, so you want to be careful. I would keep the stuff on Facebook and LinkedIn general, depending on what you were going for. I mean, I'm secure in my position, and I'm 40 years old. I'm not looking to change careers, so I'm not worried about my LinkedIn account. But if I was new or looking to change careers, I would definitely have a LinkedIn account, and I would keep my firearms ownership and use kind of neutral on there, because
I don't know. I mean, I agree.
That's
you don't want to be so
a different comfort level.
Well, I don't think you want to be so radical and over the top, but I'm just saying, like, my last job interview for a teaching position, I walked in with an ID or an IPSC jacket on, and had my hobby of, you know, and instructing and teaching and all that. Like, I used that as part of my sort of promoting my qualifications as an instructor
in
the interview.
That's the thing.
This is my point. Yeah. I'm saying that depends on where you are, because we live in Carleton County, and you know, there was three people in that interview with me, and even two ladies and a man, and then one of the ladies had shot a moose. You know, like it wasn't, you know, it depends where you are. Mm-hmm. Downtown Toronto is going to be different. Absolutely. So you really have to tailor it.
Yeah,
so
I would keep
your LinkedIn. Your LinkedIn needs to reflect the job you want.
Yep. That's I think that's the best advice you can give right there. So I would say living downtown Toronto, unless you're applying to a gun store, I'd probably keep firearms very, very low key.
Yeah, and then in George's case, where his entire career has been in the firearms industry.
Yeah, he should keep that pretty high up there.
It's going to be constant, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm not going to be hiding my love for, you know,
1911s. Firearms
history, 1911s, shotguns, anything, any archaic machine.
There you go.
You know, I'm fine with that. But, yeah, that's my career, so I have firearms as a prominent part of my character. It's who I am.
Right.
And if you Google me, it's going to take you about 2 seconds to realize, hey, George is one of those gun nuts. Well, you know, I'm not going to even send my resume to a place that would look askance at that. You know, it's reflecting the job I want is how I have my LinkedIn, my Facebook. You know, I've deleted lots of posts off Facebook because, you know, maybe it's a little bit too politically biased. You know, maybe exposing some extremist views or views I just, you know, don't want to publicly air. But, you know, you got to maintain, this is my persona. This is my public image. At the same time, this is who I am.
Right.
But for LinkedIn, definitely, that's a public resume.
Yeah.
So keep that to being what you want to do.
Perfect. All right. Well, then, Owen, I guess you're up for this email from Terry.
All right. Hello, Slamfire guys. I am a relatively new listener, and I must say I haven't missed a show since I started listening in December. In fact, I enjoy this show so much that I have gone back to the beginning and started listening to all the episodes. You have my condolences. I find the easy camaraderie among the three of you entertaining, and I find myself laughing a lot. A number of years ago, I got my concealed weapons permit. For a while, I carried a handgun in my vehicle in a case under the seat. I never needed to use it, and eventually, I took it out, put it in the closet, and forgot about it. Since becoming a SFR fan, however, I have realized that having the right to carry is a privilege that I am wasting. So I started looking for a firearm that I can actually carry on my person. Again, thanks to SFR. In my quest for the perfect conceal carry weapon, I have tried a number of different guns. I had some questions about how to correctly hold a handgun and which stance would be best for shooting, and Owen was kind enough to make a video for me which answered my questions. Thank you, Owen. As being able to see what you were doing made it that much easier for me to practice and imitate. I have narrowed my weapon choices down to three. An M&P shield, a Glock 19, and a Glock 26. All three have pros and cons, and I was hoping for some input from the three of you to help me decide. I look forward to hearing what you have to say. I should also state that my preferred carry method is in the waistband at my back. Thank you for the very entertaining and always educational podcast. Keep up the good work.
Well, we're basically going to have to recommend a 1911 because George is here. And I also find it quite humorous that a Canadian podcast was able to jumpstart somebody's re-interest in carrying concealed firearms for self-defense. So we must be doing something right, even if we are Canadian and we can't do it ourselves.
I don't know. The fact that he's going back and listening to everything from the beginning, I think you guys might have a stalker.
Yeah.
No, we did, though.
You know, that Smith & Wesson Shield he's looking at, that's a fantastic pistol. It really is. That's really the gun that Glock was looking at when they were developing the Glock 43. So there's a lot of traction that Glock needs to rein in before they're going to catch up to what that shield has done.
I heard that the shield sales just went through the roof when it first came out. Like, people love it. And it's continuing to just sell like crazy. Like,
it's because it's so thin, right? Because it's thinner than a lot of other semi-automatic.
See, I don't know. I've never handled one because we can't get them up here in Canada.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, it is narrower. But also, the single stack nature of that magazine, it's not a true single stack. It is a little staggered. So you're able to get an extra round in there. But just
like
the overall
one and a half stack.
It feels good in the hand. I mean, it's not so narrow that it's difficult to hold on to, like say some of the car handguns, just way too skinny. No, these are really comfortable guns, and they're easy to shoot well with, which makes it an absolute winner.
That's your recommendation then, is the shield.
I could happily carry a shield myself.
Cool.
Do they look like they have a high bore axis, George, or do they?
They just look that way. It's okay. Really not I wouldn't call it a high bore axis. It's not like a SIG. Because SIGs, as much as I love SIG, not disparaging SIGs at all, but the SIG P220 series is one of my favorite guns on the planet. But I mean, really, that high bore axis is ridiculous.
Mm. I love my 320, but it doesn't matter what anyone says. It's noticeable. The bore axis is noticeable.
And mm-hmm.
It doesn't need to be. It went to striker fire to get the high bore axis. Give me a break.
Well, they just jury-rigged the two, what was it, the 290?
250.
The 250. They took that 250, which everybody hated, and they jury-rigged.
Double action only.
Yeah, and granted, it's a great double action trigger, but they took that 250 and just jury-rigged it into a striker, and now all of a sudden, it's like one of the best things on the planet. And I still feel like it's a hollow, tinny, high bore axis kind of, it's kind of like a retarded striker. I mean, it's almost.
I think the 250 was made with the 320 in mind, just like the 42 was made, knowing that the. I mean, sure, we could come up with the 43, but why don't we come up with a 380 first, sell the heck out of that for a year, and then we'll drop the single stack 9 on them.
Well, they know how to market, and that's the same thing iPod or Apple does. They do the same thing.
But I think the 250, George, was designed with the 320 in mind. I think they knew that they were going to go there next.
I don't know. Maybe. I hope that's right, because that would mean that SIG is very shrewd. Instead, I think what happened was they made the 250, and nobody liked it, and the engineers were getting slapped up the back of their heads, like, what were you guys thinking? And then they were like, no, we're going to do this with it. And then they, here's the 320. And then everything.
There's where we differ. I think the engineers do what marketing tells them to. This is what's selling. Go make this. Or this is our long-term plan. Make this, then this.
We don't know, I guess.
A lot of German engineers, have you?
No.
Since we're not familiar with Glock 26 either, because they're prohibs up here. So are you familiar with those, George? Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't really know a whole lot about them other than the subcompacts, right?
It's a great little gun. It's very compact. So much so that, it's kind of difficult to hold on to for people not used to such an abbreviated grip. But the beauty of it is you can put in a Glock 23 grip or magazine. You can put in a Glock 17 magazine and you can run the extendeds just fine with it. It's a neat little gun, but it feels thick. It's a very thick little chunk. It's fun to shoot, and it does everything well. It's kind of like taking out a cute but chubby girl. It's just a little bit more than what you might be comfortable seeing.
She gets the job done, but you're not taking her around to your friend's house. Is that all right?
And on that note, Trevor, why don't you bring us this next email?
Gary says, I wholeheartedly agree with your assessment of that lump of metal they are calling a Model 29. I saw one on the Frontiersman and asked to see it. From the moment it hit my hand, I was repulsed. It was as if someone had placed a snake in my hand. Speaking on behalf of snake owners everywhere, and former snake owner, wasn't that bad. However, in no way did it remind me of my cherished Model 29-2. People that have shot it marveled at the ease with which they hit the target. I could go on and on about this gun, but I know you like to keep your shows around an hour. Of my three Smith & Wesson revolvers, my 1939 K22 Outdoorsman, I love that gun, and my stainless Model 66-6, the 29, would be the keeper. I believe I would let my Colt Python go before it. So, Trevor, do yourself a favor, ditch the imposter pronto, and get yourself a 29-2, and live blissfully ever after. I even brought it up with Doc Wesson. Doc Wesson and I were chatting on Facebook the other night, and I was telling him my impressions of the Model 29-10 and how I felt like it was basically an Orenco clone of a Smith & Wesson product, something like a Llama or a Rossi. And he said, yep, couldn't agree more. They just, I don't know. George, have you seen any of the Smith & Wesson classic lines yet, or the guns that they've reintroduced under their quote-unquote classic line?
I have. I mean, it's kind of like Coca-Cola's new Coke. No, it's not the original Coke anymore. Coca-Cola Classic is not the original Coke. The new series that they've got there, it's just not the same. They've taken those manufacturing shortcuts, and they've managed to do something that would almost be impossible in a revolver, but they took the soul out of it, if you know what I mean.
I'm going to agree with you. You were going on about the nostalgia of the 1911, and I was like, it means nothing to me. But in this gun, it was all about the soul, George. It was all about that classic feel, that essence that would radiate off of the gun. And instead, I picked this thing up, and it felt cheap.
It's the tangible intangible is what we're talking about here. It's something that you can't necessarily quantify and measure, but you can feel it.
Well, you know, I mean, one thing, changing the style, size, and design of the grip didn't help. No. It also made the gun difficult to shoot because you can't grip it properly. It's an end frame with a grip that belongs on a 38.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm out there pricing what people are claiming to be vintage grips on eBay. I have no way of knowing whether I'm buying a legitimate, genuine vintage grip. But I'm looking at paying $125 for two pieces of wood.
You know what? It's kind of funny that you say that, because I've got a couple of vintage 29 grips that I'm keeping, because one day I'm going to buy an old 29. So I'm keeping those grips on hand.
So basically what you're saying is I've got some and you're not getting them. Nah, 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 nah. Yeah.
No. Ice cream. You don't got no ice cream.
Classic Eddie Murphy. Gotta love it. But no, because exactly like what you said, I mean, the new grips, you got those Hogue grips that come off. They're very narrow and the finger grooves feel weird on the new guns.
I actually don't mind the Hogue rubber grips with the finger grooves. I know a lot of people say finger grooves don't fit everybody, but so far I've been lucky. Every gun I picked up with finger grooves, my fingers happen to fit. So I am not opposed to finger grooves. I have one of those whole grips on my 686 4-inch, but and I love it. It's stainless, and stainless looks good with the black whole grip, but this is supposed to be blued, and it's not that deep, rich blue from back in the day, and it's just, I mean, the cylinder catch was loose out of the box and continued to loosen up until I noticed it. Had to tighten that down. The locking block pin for the extractor rod, that wasn't even seated correctly. I had to tape the gun up and seat it into place. And I paid a premium for this gun. Like, you know, I could have got myself a nice Tanfoglio Ipsic pistol, which I've always wanted as well, but haven't always wanted it as much as I've always wanted Dirty Harry's gun. I've wanted Dirty Harry's gun since I was watching Dirty Harry with my father, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I pick up this gun, and I'm like, this is a gun that my dad would be proud that I bought, you know?
Yeah.
But it's not what I bought. I bought a cheap knockoff.
No. See, that's exactly right. You know, it's like that old saying, you can't go home again. You know, once the company moves past old manufacturing processes, you're never going to go back and get that same kind of quality, that just the aesthetics, the feel, the, you know, just the whole package. You feel that the gun is not right. It's not the same.
Well, it's summed up best as they just don't make them like they used to.
You got it, buddy.
Yep.
Exactly.
I hope they never make a Colt Python again.
All right. Well, this next email comes to us from Spencer. He writes, "Hey, guys, that was a really interesting show last week on setting up a new advocacy organization in Canada. I don't know how the current organizations are set up, but it sounds like neither current group allows members to vote directly for the group's leadership. If you are setting up a new group, I would strongly suggest that this be a central feature of any organization for a couple of reasons. First of all, it gives you a final court of appeal with conflicts. Questions can always be put to a direct member vote, so a situation like the NFA's wouldn't need to go to court to settle. Secondly, and probably most importantly, it allows the organization to adapt over time, to align to the group's goals and with their members' interests and beliefs. I mentioned the Cincinnati Revolution a few emails back. This was the NRA annual meeting in 1977 where the old guard, the hunters and sportsmen who wanted to focus the NRA on just hunting and shooting sports, was trounced by the new guard, a large group of members that wanted the organization to focus on the fight, on fighting the growing gun control movement here in the U.S. People talk about how today's organization is different from their grandfather's NRA, and it is. But that's because grandpa's kids and grandkids voted in new board members and completely changed the goals and complexion of the group. Personally, I think it's critical that any organization gets direct feedback from its membership and that the membership can adjust the direction of the group. Voting memberships allow these shifts to happen, and it keeps the group in line with what the members are interested in accomplishing. And now, the news! Last night, I was able to pick up what I'm sure will be my new carry pistol, an FNSC in 9mm. This is the compact Model FN announced at this year's SHOT Show, and after falling in love with the full-size gun, I've been anticipating its release. I know Trevor has the long slide FNS, and in terms of size, I'm guessing that's similar to a Glock 34. The full size I already had has the same slide length as the Glock 19, but with a full Glock 17 grip size. It has the 17 round mag. The compact is shorter in both dimensions, with the slide being just under an inch less and the grip reduced to about Glock 26 length that holds 12 rounds. You can use the full-size mags in the compact, and it comes with one already set up with a sleeve to fill in the gaps around the exposed area. This sleeve has the same texture as a grip, so it's like holding the full-size gun, but just with a shorter barrel. It also comes with two of the 12-round magazines, one with a flush base pad for maximum concealment, and another with a pinky grip base pad that allows you to get all of your fingers on the grip. With the flush pad, your pinky ends up just under the grip, although the design of the base gives you an excellent two-finger grip. Like the other FNS pistols, the ergonomics of the compact are fantastic. It has essentially the same features and design as the full-sized guns, with the same texturing, replaceable backstraps, and well-designed layout. It's also fully ambidextrous and can be bought with or without a manual safety. Neither of mine has that. Besides the size difference, they did make a few changes, mainly to make it easier to carry. The takedown lever is smaller, and the mag release buttons are lower profile without the pronounced ridge the full-size ones have. The beaver tail is rounded off a lot as well. The sights are similar to the full-size gun, fixed Novak style with a larger front dot. However, these are night sights as well, which I think is pretty important for a carry gun. I was planning on having to replace these, so I was pleasantly surprised when it turned out to already have them. The trigger is slightly different, with slightly less springy feel to its break, but that could just be the normal variation between parts. Since I've only dry-fired it a little compared to the full size, all I can say right now is that it's similar, but not exactly the same. I don't have a range report yet, but I'll shoot you another email when I get some time to try it out. Like its big brother, I'm impressed with it out of the box, and I expect it to shoot just as well as the bigger gun. Oh, and Trevor, I took the Garand out yesterday to shoot with some friends from work. We probably put 200 rounds through it with Greek HXP, Wolf, and PPU 30-06, and the gun cycled perfectly with the Garand gear compensating plug. I can't say the same for my on-block clip loading skills. I had a few fall apart in the gun and had to cycle the rounds back out and rebuild the clips. Now I see why we went to box magazines. Clips are a pain in the butt. Take care, Spencer.
Awesome. That's an amazing email. I wish we could get even the what they call the full-size FN up here. As far as Grant, I have an update. Filthy's cool. On his way over to our Grand Guy's place this weekend. My barrel has arrived, and possibly all of my other parts have arrived.
Awesome. That's fantastic.
Yeah, very much. George, you got any experience with FN pistols? Not the hammer-fired, but the striker-fired line?
Yeah, absolutely. Those guns are made about an hour away from my house.
Oh, fantastic.
And I do have kind of an open invitation to tour the factory.
Does that include a guest? Because I will jump on an airplane.
It didn't say it didn't include a guest.
There you go. But, carry on.
I've talked to a lot of the engineers, a lot of the guys making the guns. I was out at the NHRA, the national drag races here in Charlotte. And, a lot of those guys came up to watch the drag races. And, of course, being a small world, we ended up spending a lot of time talking to each other. Those guys, you know, everything that you were saying about how Smith & Wesson is making that new Model 29, you know, all of that, you know, is out the window there. I mean, they're doing those guns the old-fashioned way. You know, they might be using new products, new machines, new techniques, CNC mills, but they're going at it with that old-fashioned care and devotion because they understand what they're making.
Sounds like Remington. Wow. Wait. No, that's the opposite. Sorry.
Yeah. The only other gun company that I'm really going to say that's doing it the same way is going to be Daniel Defense, and I'm going to go out on a limb here and say Beretta. But the guys down there at FN, they really love the guns that they're making, and it shows. You're not going to find all that crap that you're finding, you know, even with like an expensive $1,800 Kimber, you know, things that aren't right in it. I mean, these guys, they're making the guns right. They're doing a good job. And those guns feel great in the hands. Those little FNX compacts.
They do, man. Like, I've got the long slide, which is a competitor to the Glock 34 and the M&P Pro. Mm-hmm. And it's every bit as good as those two guns. A little short in the trigger department, mind you, but it's hundreds less. In Canada, that gun was $655 before tax. You're not going to get an M&P or a Glock 34 for under $800. And I'll put that gun up against either of those two pistols any day of the week. It's my new three gun pistol. I haven't been this impressed with a new pistol in, well, ever.
That's cool. Yeah, no, I remember you being very impressed with it when you shot it with me here at my range. I mean, it was, and it is, it's a neat gun. It works very well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The care and consideration and everything about that FN, the design, the texture. I mean, they have reasons for every little detail in that gun, and they can explain those reasons to you.
Well, I'd like them to explain the trigger to me, because the trigger return spring is awful. There's definitely a break-in period in that trigger. I went in and cleaned it all up and polished everything, and it's still...
yeah, that was my chief complaint with it, wasn't it, Trev?
Yeah, it's got a fair bit of creep before the break, and and the reset just isn't...
Nobody makes the perfect pistol, but FN,
Glock, hello.
FN wants to.
Yeah, well, they tidy up that trigger. They might, because, I mean, what makes a good pistol? Good sights, good trigger, and reliability. That's what makes the perfect fighting pistol. And
now, I've shot some of those FNSs. I've shot like guns that were in our range rental programs at Blackstone, and then here at Point Blank Range where I'm at. They started out a little gritty, but they, you know, as the rounds went through them, they got really smooth. The resets never really improved all that much, but you got a good smooth trigger pull, a good clean break, you know, after some break in. Maybe you clean it and lube it with some good, you know, good quality product. I don't know what you guys are using up there, but
Slipstream. Come on, man.
Slipstream is excellent. If you're using that, you are ahead of the game.
Can't
so you can move to the top of the class.
Yeah, we're a Slipstream kind of show here. We all use
Fantastic.
Slipstream.
Fantastic. Because, I mean, I've been dealing with some other products, Fire Clean.
Yeah, I hear good things about that, though.
Z-Max's Bolt Lube. And those are great oils, but they're just oils. They're not Slipstream. But for a CLP, I mean, if you have one bottle, one product, Fire Clean is outstanding. You know, if it's going to go onto the internals of the gun, I'm still pulling out Slipstream. I mean, that stuff is just the best.
And there we have it. We've turned this into a Slipstream commercial.
And you can seriously get your Slipstream at PressCheckVentures.com.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Thank you, Trevor. So if you want to send us an email, you can email the show at slamfireradio@gmail.com. We encourage you to do that. We love hearing from you guys. So thank you so much to everyone who emailed in. And we're going to move into some iTunes reviews. I had been checking the Canadian feed and neglected to check the American feed. And was it Toby or Melissa emailed Trevor and said, hey, check your American feed.
She didn't email so much as she sent me an angry Facebook message, but that's, I think, all she knows
semantics,
how to do.
Really,
yeah,
semantics.
Send angry messages.
So we've got three of them here from the Americans, and they're quite short, so I'll just go ahead and read them all.
Like Toby.
So this first one is entitled Amusing and Informative, and it's from Rob Little, and he says, fun show, good topics, three Canadians shooting the bleep about firearms, hunting, and shooting sports-related topics.
Shooting the breeze? Shooting the breeze. That'd be a good name for a show, actually.
That would be a good name for the show if it was breeze, yeah. But I had to say bleep because I didn't want to actually bleep it. I just said bleep, so that'll work. But shooting the breeze would have been a great name. I wish we had kept that, actually.
Very clever, yeah.
Anyway, I love the hunting stories, but too bad Matthew spends most of his time wandering around in the woods with nothing to show for it. Keep it up, guys. Hey, you haven't seen my calves. I got something to show for it.
Hey, man, you can harvest Dr. Pepper cans like nobody's business.
That's it. That's it. All right, this next one. So thank you, Rob Little, for that. That was, I love it. All right. Don't miss this show, says Blind Sheepdog. That's kind of an ironic name. The three hosts.
I think that person friended me on Facebook the other day.
That's funny. The three hosts combine great information and instruction along with a hilarious touch. So there you have it, straight from the blind sheepdog. At least he's not the deaf sheepdog. And this last one comes to us from MTech73, and it's entitled Download It. I look forward to every episode they release. Slamfire has become my favorite podcast. The strange thing is, I'm a Texan, but I relate more with these three Canadians than any other podcast that is based in the States. Keep up the great work, gentlemen, and I'll keep listening. Matthew, can you send me some 22 long rifle? Partridge. Seriously, Partridge? Oh. Sincerely, Matt M. from Texas. Well, Matt M., I have to say you have fantastic initials and a great first name, but Partridge? Nah. Nah, it's gross.
Well, what if he is talking about actual Partridge?
Well,
not
just
gross?
He's not.
He's not.
No, he's not. And that's why I'm not going to send him any 22 long rifle. I'm keeping it.
There you go.
So thank you guys for writing those. We love them. We appreciate them. You have no idea how much we appreciate them. So thank you so much for giving us the reviews that you do. It really means a lot to us, and it really helps us get the show exposed a bit more. So keep it up. All right, then. Let's move into some shout-outs and goodbyes. Who has some shout-outs?
My shout-outs to Blind Sheepdog. Because of his review, I accepted his friend request on Facebook.
There you go. So I want to know now, Blind Sheepdog, why you haven't friended me on Facebook. Is it because I won't send you 22, or is it because you think it's Partridge?
There. I don't have any shout-outs, but George, maybe you want to take this opportunity to let the listeners know, you know, the shop that you're at, your YouTube channel, your blog, plug all of your social media contacts, would you please?
Oh, absolutely. I work daily at Point Blank Range in Charlotte. And on Facebook, there's Point Blank Range in Mooresville and Point Blank Range in South Charlotte. So we have two Facebook pages, two locations, one great company, one great flavor. MattOger.com for my daily blog. Also on the Twitters and LinkedIn as George Hamilton Hill on Facebook as George Hamilton Hill. And even if you're Canadian, I don't refuse a friend request from Canadians, so it's all good. But Amazon.com, check out Uprising USA, Uprising UK, which is my favorite book of the series. So please buy my books and let me feed my guns. They're hungry.
Not the kids, though. Kids can go hungry.
Yeah, the guns are more important.
They can fend for themselves.
Yeah, they'll be fine.
Attaboy, you're doing it right.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again, George, for joining us. And to the listeners, make sure you check out the Crusader Podcast Network at crusaderpodcast.com. Please make a point to join any or all of our national firearms associations. It's important that we support them because they help to support us. Check us out on Gun Owners of Canada. We have a forum there where sometimes people leave comments. Usually it's just double up buck, disappointing our listeners by not having new content. Also, CGN, we have a bit of a, it's not our own forum there, but we do have some comments where I post a show there in the firearms media. So if you want to check us out on CGN, you can check us out there as well. Please be sure to like us on Facebook. We're at 1,174 likes and counting, so help drive up those numbers. And we'll be sure to spam you with all kinds of gun-related things. We really won't, but we post our show there, so that's cool. But other than that, I just want to say once again to George, thanks for joining us. Your valiant effort at defending the 1911 did not go unnoticed. I'm sitting a little closer to the fence, but I'm back off it on the Glock side. So I'm not quite there, but I do understand where you're coming from.
I've sown the seeds, and thus I consider my mission successful.
Excellent.
I'm not sure who you sowed those seeds into, but...
Well, clearly it was me. That was
thanks
it.
Thanks for coming out, yeah. Well, one final comment. My 2011 is the most comfortable thing I've ever held.
All right. Well, there you have it.
I will accept that.
From Trevor himself.
Well, thanks, guys. It was a lot of fun.
It was. And to the listeners, thanks again for listening. We will see you guys next week.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something.
When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.
Okay. Am I going to get a lot of hate mail from whale-eating females up in Nova Scotia?
New Brunswick, but close. It was funny. I was at the bar, and I saw these ladies. And I don't normally go up to talk to ladies in the bar, but they had an accent, and I wanted to find out where they were from. So I went up and said, oh, hi, ladies. Are you ladies from England? And one of them glared at me and said, Wales. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. Are you Wales from England?
Plastic. So New Brunswick, is that like Canada's Oregon?
I don't know what Oregon is in.
No.
More like Canada's Maine.
Yeah.
Canada's Maine. Well, we have,
Maine.
In Oregon, we have Portlandia. You know, we've got Portland, Oregon, which is where all the weirdos live. And I know Canada's got their own little weird enclave.
Yeah. It's called Ontario.
Ontario?
Yeah.
I thought it was Toronto with that mayor.
Yeah, he's the best mayor they ever had.
Yeah.
You know, I can't.
Funny, but it's true.
At least he provides entertainment, so.
Yes, he does, yeah.